It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the state's Joint Finance Committee rejected the governor's call for more than $70 million in funding to provide housing for homeless people. We'll talk with the head of the State Council on Homelessness about the issue and where the budget goes next. First, summer is a time of outdoor events, usually from sports to festivals to live music to fairs and markets, an experience many of us have been missing in the last year plus. Along with some of those great experiences comes something else, the crowd of people that enjoy them with you. As we've witnessed in sports, a lot of times these events aren't the same, aren't as exciting without the people, even if we don't always like things like the long lines or crowded arenas. While safety is still a concern, many outdoor events are starting back up with precautions in place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has the pandemic changed the way you feel about crowds or even just being in a coffee shop or library with other people? Have you missed doing things in public in the company of others? Have you recently attended, like a sports game, say, a concert, flea market, whatever it might be? Are you feeling, whether for health reasons or you're just not used to it anymore, are you feeling a little nervous about being back in a crowd? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Regan Gurung is Executive Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Oregon State University and Professor of Psychological Sciences. He's also the Associate Vice Provost there. He spent 20 years at UW Green Bay. Regan, welcome back.
Hi, Rob. Great to be back.
Have you been missing crowds of strangers over the last year?
Oh, absolutely. Almost every day of this last year, as all of us academics taught remotely, you know, we moved from facing a large group of students in front of us to facing two screens in the same room day after day. So, you know, it's been an absolute torture to be at home teaching when I am so used to being in front of 300 or so students out there taking in psychology. So, you know, part of my job was being with crowds. Fun was being with crowds. Missed it all.
Is there something in our psychology that wants to be in a crowd that, you know, do we get a benefit from being around a whole bunch of people?
So, absolutely. Now, on one level, there's the straightforward, when we are around other people, especially people we know are like us, there is that benefit, there's that social support, there is that whole notion of if something happens, there are other people for us. But when we think about crowds and how we've missed crowds, I think what we're getting from crowds is much more than that. What psychological science has shown is that crowds almost are an indicator of what we can experience. And we get a lot of information from crowds. When crowds react to something, it gives us information about how we should feel. And in many ways, being in a crowd actually takes up your own experience, in most cases, takes up your experience of just about anything, whether it's sports or a movie or a concert. Watching it in a crowd, especially because of the feedback you are getting from the other crowd members, takes it up a whole number of notches, and just the whole enjoyment of it increases dramatically. And this is not just being with your friends in a crowd, it's just being in a crowd where everybody is rejoicing or celebrating or enjoying the same thing. It just feels better than having that same experience by yourself. So a range of information that a crowd gives us, and we actually get a level of physiological arousal from being in a crowd. Our senses are heightened. We just feel more excitement.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Diane is calling from on the road. Diane, hi.
Well, hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Diane?
Well, you were talking about how it feels to finally shred our problems as far as COVID and go out, although I'm very cautious about it. But we did. We were dancers. We couldn't dance all winter because everything was indoors and we weren't going to be in that situation. And this past weekend, we had live music in Menominee at both Jake's and Pioneer, and we went dancing at both places. saw all our good friends and had a great time. It felt wonderful.
All right, Diane, I think I know the answer to this, but do you have more fun dancing in a room full of people than dancing at home alone?
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
Diane, thank you so much for sharing that. Now that, Regan, I think is an activity. I mean, I suppose people dance around their house by themselves, but that is one that kind of cries out for being around people, right?
Well, absolutely. And it's not just, you know, it's not just the, you know, seeing people's reactions, seeing people, you know, moving to the same music and keeping the beat, whether you can keep the beat or not. And I'm going to assume Diane can keep it quite well if she's done it often, but you know, it's everybody's moving along. It's that synchrony. And I think there is this magic to the synchrony that you get when you're in a crowd. And one of the things Diane started off with is huge. Just being able to go back to these places in a crowd, it's that sign, it's that symbol, both implicitly and explicitly, that things are better. And I think it's that seeing a crowd again is sending us that message that things are better. And I think that's just so much that we're getting from being able to be out in the crowd again.
Thanks a lot for that call, Diane. Happy dancing to you. We're talking about crowds, the psychology of what we get out of being around people, even if they're strangers, maybe at an event. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you looking forward to doing things out in public with people? Are you still feeling nervous for health reasons or just because you're not used to it anymore? Call 800-642-1234. Psychologist Regan Gurung is with us from Oregon State University. We heard from Doug in Madison who couldn't stay on the line but said even though Doug's vaxxed, being out in public still makes him nervous. Doug doesn't trust that people who aren't vaccinated will be wearing masks. Doug still wears a mask in public. Regan, I mean, in a lot of ways, we're through the worst of it. We're not done with the pandemic, though. And a lot of people, I think, are in Doug's boat, not quite ready, even if vaccinated, not quite ready to go all out unmasked in big crowds.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Doug's highlighted some of the key things for us to keep in mind is, first off, there's going to be a lot of individual differences. There are some of us who, you know, really thrive on crowds. There are some of us who don't like crowds. But even besides that, I think the really important point here is knowing the context, right? Knowing how much can you trust the people around you to be vaccinated, to not be carrying COVID or, you know, taking the necessary precautions, as it were. And I think something that's implicit in that message that all of us need to think about is even when we are in a crowd, we need to be really conscious of different people's levels of comfort and watch for that. And watch for that. Watch personal space. Personal space in general is a good thing to watch, but particularly now after COVID, when you do go to a store, you know, I'm always careful watching how close I get to somebody in a store, even though I am vaccinated. And I don't, you know, in most stores in Oregon right now, we are right on the verge of reducing some restrictions, but all businesses or most businesses in town, we still wear a mask. And I think that's something that does help a lot of people feel safer. Even as we reduce those restrictions, even if you are someplace where mask wearing is no longer called for, keep your finger on your own pulse. What are you comfortable with? Because you being in a crowd and nervous and anxious will do you more harm than good. So always keep a finger on your own pulse. What are you comfortable with? And undoubtedly, there will be some situations that we will be more comfortable being out in than others. And that is worth thinking about and considering as we make our decisions of where to go and what to do.
We're talking to Regan Gurung, professor of psychological sciences and associate vice provost at Oregon State. We're talking about crowds and why it can be fun to be surrounded by other people and how we might have missed that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite memory where you were part of a crowd at a concert, sports event, a fair, you name it? Has the pandemic made you look forward to spending more time in crowds? Or if you're out of the habit now, are you kind of wondering if you're going to be ready for it? It's going to feel weird. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Regan Gurung, professor of psychological sciences and associate vice provost at Oregon State. He's formerly at UW-Green Bay. We're talking about the ups and downs of being in a crowd and how the pandemic may have changed our attitudes toward it, made some people look forward to being out in groups of people at a sporting event, say a farmer's market, you name it. Maybe other people not so excited to be back out in there. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Are you eager to get back out to a concert, a game, you name it? Or even when the health concerns have passed, which they haven't quite yet, I know, even then, are you going to feel weird? Or do you think you'll feel weird? Call 800-642-1234. And was there a favorite crowd you were part of? Maybe at a concert, a sporting event, you name it. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Kevin on Facebook, who says his daughter had two national volleyball tournaments in the last 3 weeks in Missouri and Kentucky. Convention centers were packed, no masks. It was glorious, Kevin says. Hopefully everybody was being safe along the way, though. But Regan, I have tentatively set foot out at some events myself, and it's been great to do some things again. A lot of people are probably feeling that way right now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, you know, and when Kevin mentioned that it was great, I know my first thought is, you know, how many, I'm hoping everybody around Kevin in there has been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting to see how my own feelings about that have changed. And I know there was a big line between, you know, I call it the before vaccination and the after vaccination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, relying on the strength of science and vaccinations, we know that this is the best we have to deal with COVID. And once I had the vaccination, my feeling outside was so different from before. And so I think it is so nice to have that happen more and more. I live in a county right here that is the highest vaccinated county in Oregon, which makes me feel even better about being outside. And but I am also noticing that as every day goes on, the more it's getting more and more comfortable and to be out there with people and less off that, ooh, how far away am I? How many people are here? We had graduation just last week here at Oregon State, and looking around at the thousands of people there and thinking that this was the first time this many people in this area had gotten together in 15 months, wow, that was something. And you know, to use Kevin's word, what a glorious feeling that was. And more of that coming up, I know.
Thanks for sharing that comment, Kevin. You can share your thoughts on crowds and if you're ready for them on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Regan, you mentioned people might have different capacities for being a crowd, even in normal times. Now, forget the pandemic. You know, we hear about extroverts and introverts. How much of a difference is there from one person to the next when it comes to how much crowd they can tolerate?
Right. And it's actually both psychological differences and differences in terms of attention to germs and cleanliness and things like that. From a psychological standpoint, extroversion and introversion is really interesting because, you know, most of us, whether you've taken a psychology course or not, you know, it basically seems like people who like, you know, hanging out with others and people don't, right? The most basic kinds of explanation. But the thing about extroversion and introversion is it's there's evidence that it's actually a difference at the neurological level. Our nervous systems, the nervous system of an extrovert is different from the nervous system of an introvert, where the latter, an introvert, doesn't need as much social stimulation to be satisfied. You know, in just slightly more technical terms, an introvert hits their threshold much earlier at much lower levels of activity than an extrovert does. An extrovert, on the other hand, needs more noise, needs more activity for their thresholds to be hit. So automatically, an extrovert loves a crowd because their nervous thresholds are being hit. They are getting their hit. It's great to be an extrovert in a crowd. An introvert, a crowd is not the most natural place that they'd want to be. And many introverts, very naturally, because of their physiology, actually need a break from being in a crowd after some time and are more likely to favor smaller groups. So immediately, the whole comfort level with the crowd will vary based on whether you are an extrovert or an introvert. And then when you add COVID and the pandemic on top of that, we now see the individual differences in terms of sensitivity to germs, or at least, you know, your conscious sensitivity to germs. There are some individuals who don't mind, literally don't mind if there are people sneezing all around them. There are others who, the moment somebody even begins to sniffle, will take many steps back. And that was the case pre-COVID, that if you are somebody who is very sensitive and found yourself being, let alone germ-phobic, but, you know, being sensitive to cleanliness and hygiene, being out in crowds during COVID is a very difficult time because of that sudden exposure to just so many more people. And it's not just COVID, it's even things like colds. And let me tell you, I love looking at that data on the lower number of flu cases and even the lower number of colds during the times we were all wearing masks. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want to have spent all life always wearing a mask, but there is that clear-cut evidence that, wow, those masks sure kept a whole bunch of stuff away from our immune systems.
Talking about crowds and our psychology, Regan Gurung is with us from Oregon State University. You can join in general, in normal times. Do you love being in crowds or hate it? And have you been hankering to be back at a crowded football game, basketball game, bar, concert, farmer's market, you name it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Regan, at various points during the depths of the pandemic, people were talking about, oh, is this going to be the end of, you know, big cities with lots of crowded things going on? Is this going to turn people away from these kind of events where people congregate? It seems like what you're saying about our psychology, probably not. We humans have lived through lots of diseases over the millennia, and we keep getting back together.
Yeah, and it's actually more than that, Rob. First off, I think we are so conditioned to crowds and people. We are so naturally designed for social interaction that the moment things open up, and I'm sure many of our, you know, the listeners have already experienced this, the moment you go back to that, after a little bit of hesitation, it just feels like it always is. And we quickly revert back to years and years of conditioning of being comfortable in crowds. Now, if you were somebody who was never comfortable in crowds, obviously, you know, that's going to get worse now. But for those of us who've loved it, who yearn for it, very quickly, we will go back into those same patterns of behavior once things open up. And that's not all. You know, I love highlighting the fact that crowds actually make things better. You know, they've done studies where people have watched movies alone and then the same movies in a crowd. And even controlling for sound and size of the screen, the people who watched the same movie in a crowd actually enjoyed the movie more. You know, and that right there for me is, yeah, crowds do so much for us. They give us information, they help us just get more out of everything, a lot of the experiences that we have. And, you know, doing whatever we can to make going back into crowds more comfortable for ourselves, if that's what we like, that's what we need to focus on.
Do you have thoughts, Regan, on the performance of people if they're in front of crowds or not? So athletes in an empty stadium versus a crowded one. Or as a musician, I've played for lots of empty bars and a few crowded ones. A lot more fun to play for the crowded one, and I feel like I play better anyway. Is there something to that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the musician story and the actor story is common. You know, acting or performing over the last year on a screen is just not the same. I can tell you that teaching remotely over the screen is just doesn't feel the same. And lo and behold, there is a phenomena called social facilitation, where are we even implicitly and non-consciously put in more of an effort when we are surrounded by people. And this goes way back to early studies that showed that a bicyclist bicycles faster when training with somebody else than when training alone. And that's a phenomenon, especially for athletics, especially for performance. That physiological arousal that we get from being in a crowd actually makes us take our game up a notch. So it's not just the experience of the person in the crowd, but it's even the experience on the field. And, you know, as we come into the summer, I think of the times sitting at Lambeau Field watching a Packer game and having those 80,000 fans around you. Yeah, it felt great to have all those fans around. And players have reported that that home team excitement pushes up their whole game a level as well. So it's great for being in the crowd. It's absolutely wonderful for the performer, the actor, the player as well. Social facilitation, crowds do that for us.
And Regan, are you looking forward to the home field advantage of being up in front of actual people in the lecture hall again?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot wait for the fall when I step back in front of 395 people taking intro to psych.
Better than Lambeau Field. Okay, maybe not.
here at least I get to play and I'm on the field, right? So it's a whole different game.
Regan, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us again.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much.
Regan Gurung is the executive director of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Oregon State University, a professor of psychological sciences. Prior to that, he spent 20 years at UW Green Bay, which is why he can speak with firsthand experience of being at Lambeau Field. He joined us to talk about the unique experience of being part of a crowd. And there's still time to share your thoughts, your favorite experience being in a crowd, what you've missed over the course of the pandemic, what you've been looking forward to getting back to. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Now, as part of his two-year state budget proposal, Governor Tony Evers wanted more than $70 million in funding to combat homelessness and provide affordable housing grants to municipalities around the state. Republicans on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee rejected that last month, approving just over $1 million of new money for one of the state's housing assistance programs. The committee has yet to release several million dollars approved for homeless programs during the previous budget cycle. Advocates for the homeless and some lawmakers say that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the need for more resources is as urgent as ever. Republicans have said they plan to work on standalone bills to deal with the issue and point toward federal money coming to possibly deal with some of these issues. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see homelessness and housing be a priority for the state in the next budget? What questions do you have about what programs are out there? What services receive state money? Have you been homeless yourself during the pandemic or before? Do you work with homeless people in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Mike Bassford is director of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me on again, Rob.
Mike, what do we know about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on homelessness here in Wisconsin?
Well, before the pandemic, we were operating under what I now call the normal state of crisis. We had thousands of people all across the state who were homeless. From a point in time count in beginning of 2020 that counted for over 4,500 people as being what would be termed literally homeless. That would be in an emergency shelter or on the streets or in a place not meant for habitation. We still continue to have almost 20,000 children that are served by homelessness programs in schools throughout Wisconsin. And so there was a lot of work that was ahead of us that even without the pandemic would be a very tough haul. When the pandemic happened, it had a very profound effect on communities throughout the state. First and foremost, we had an issue with emergency sheltering. Because of the CDC guidelines and social distancing, we were a lot of community emergency shelters had to shut down because they were not equipped to operate under those guidelines, or a lot of shelters had to relied on volunteer work, usually from people who couldn't put themselves in a position to be exposed potentially to COVID-19. So that was a very big issue. That was the first real flashpoint of what we were experiencing. And then the ensuing economic downturn in Wisconsin put tens of thousands of Wisconsin households on the brink of being evicted from their homes and entering the homelessness system. So we had to really jump in and do a lot to help out people. I mean, mostly what I do under the normal state of crisis is basically policy work, but I had to pivot to do a lot of technical support for communities, for coalitions, for agencies, just to help them get what they needed to be able to serve people as they could in their communities.
Well, I want to look at two different sources of funding here. Let's turn to the federal government first. We saw various relief packages, some money still coming out from some of those things. What kind of things came from the federal government that might have helped with housing, whether it's keeping people in their housing in the first place or helping the people who are already homeless?
So let's start with keeping people in housing. During the first relief bill, the CARES Act, that was passed in April of last year, Wisconsin was able to commit over $25 million in emergency rental assistance for people who had to who lost their income due to the economic downturn and couldn't pay their rent. Those funds were spent, and over 14,000 households in Wisconsin were assisted, and so they were able to stay in their housing as a result of that. There was also Governor Evers in March signed Emergency Order 15, which was a 60-day rental eviction and foreclosure moratorium. And that really drove down the numbers of filed evictions and eviction judgments. And that was very successful in keeping people in housing. Since then, with the December relief funding that was passed, another large amount of funds, about $350 million, has been allocated to the state to start up another emergency rental assistance program, the Wisconsin Emergency Rental Assistance Program, otherwise known as WERA. And that is doing a great job in keeping the eviction numbers down, keeping people in housing, and keeping people stable.
We're talking about homelessness in Wisconsin during the pandemic and beyond. Mike Bassford is with us, director of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness. You can join in with your questions for our guest, your experiences maybe in your own community at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mike, here we are in a budget negotiation year. The governor put this plan to spend a chunk of money, $70 million, in funding related to homelessness. What kind of things did you see in the governor's plan that might target some of the things you're talking about here?
So when the governor put together the budget, the idea was to put together a budget that reflected the realities of the pandemic and what will hopefully be a post-pandemic period during the biennium. Out of that was the largest investment in direct funding for homelessness programs. This is from everything from case management to shelter grants to there was a new a new rental assistance program for homeless veterans that was proposed at $1 million a year. And so that the total amount of those direct spending requests came to a little over $13.5 million, which by far is more than has ever been put into any budget for homelessness directly. The rest was for the development of affordable housing, and which is incredibly important. No matter where you are in the state, urban or rural, whatever community you're in, everybody tells me the same thing, and that is the number one barrier for people who are homeless to get into housing and housing stability is the availability of affordable housing. The National Low Income Housing Coalition has estimated that for low income and extremely low income people, that is people who are earning 50% or less than the median incomes in their communities, that we are about a little more than 120,000 units shy of what we need.
Now, Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee removed just about all of that funding as they tackled the budget, but said they, you know, it's not, they're not done with it. They might do things in standalone bills. And also they pointed toward federal money that's going to cover some of the same things. What do you make of that decision? Are you hopeful that something will come of that?
So currently there is an omnibus bill that is that was introduced in the state assembly, has been 3 months ago was sent to the Senate Housing Commerce Committee. They have yet to have a hearing on that bill. And what that bill does is, it was similar to what happened in the last session of the legislature, in which there were a number of bills that passed out of the assembly that all but one of them didn't even have a vote on the floor of the state Senate. Those were disappointing. I'm generally in support of this omnibus bill and would really like to see a hearing done in the Senate and to have the legislature take that up. And that will provide extra funding for some of the programs that we were talking about. Nothing along the lines of what the governor was proposing in the budget. These were funds that were proposed in the previous budget. And so I would say that, you know, it reflects kind of a pre-COVID mentality on the priorities of funding for these programs.
We're talking to Mike Basford, director of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness, about the demand for support services during the pandemic and where things stand on funding homelessness programs and affordable housing programs in the upcoming state budget. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the state should increase spending on assistance for people who are homeless or for affordable housing, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic? Do you have questions about how this all works? Have you experienced homelessness yourself? Do you see it in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Mike Basford, director of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness, looking at the impact of the pandemic on homeless people and ideas for funding support and housing programs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about homelessness in Wisconsin and services available? Do you have experience working on these issues in your own community? Have you experienced homelessness yourself in recent years or in the distant past? Love to hear your perspective at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Ray is with us in Milwaukee. Ray, hello.
Hi. I'm going to ask about this tiny homes project. I think I saw it from California where they had built, maybe there were 20 tiny homes on a plot of land that maybe previously there would have only been one or two homes there, and they gave the homes to veterans that were homeless. Why isn't anything like that even being considered, seeing that our rents are so high? Why would the governor want to continue paying these high rents for people when you could build them a tiny home for $8,000 or less and give them a home they can say they now own.
Ray, thanks for the call. Mike, I know there have been pilot projects, I believe, for tiny homes in Madison, possibly elsewhere in the state. Do you think that could be part of the solution?
Well, certainly. I mean, yes, there have been a couple of projects. In fact, there was one that was stood up toward the end of last year in Madison, literally four blocks from where I'm talking to you right now. And that has been rather successful in keeping people safe. They took in people that were in the encampments throughout the city, and that's the OM Village folks there. There is a tiny homes project in Racine that is Veterans Village that has been running now for a few years, has been quite successful in their mission to house veterans. And it certainly is something, and it's something that other communities are also considering as well. There are a lot of things that have to be done in order for a community to set up a tiny homes village. Mostly it's things having to do with, first of all, the community wanting to have that happen. And then they have to do things such as change their zoning codes and plan for that. It's certainly something that does have our support. However, you know, it really is going to be more dependent on communities themselves really wanting to have this type of option.
Thanks for the call, Ray, at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Heather with us in Madison. Heather, hello.
Hey.
What did you want to tell us about, Heather?
I'm currently homeless right now with my three young children, and I definitely think they need to increase funding programs, just accessibility to resources for people to get out of homelessness. It's disgusting almost to the fact where people cannot get back into the renting game. I've been homeless for almost a little over a year now with my kids are 4, 3, and 1, and it's sad. We still can't find housing.
And Heather, can I ask, where do the four of you end up at night?
We're, thank God, we're being supported by an amazing group called Sankova. So we've had a roof overhead. I can't thank God enough. It makes me just cry. If it wasn't for groups like them, we would probably be living out of storage or in my vehicle at night.
But best to you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing your story, your experience with us. Your thoughts, Mike, on the story we heard there from Heather?
Well, I'm very aware of the fantastic work that Sankofa in Madison does. They do wonderful work. Highly support them. She's absolutely right that we do need more support. But I definitely would be remiss if I didn't say that the stories about what Sankofa has been able to do and other agencies and people that have been working on this all over Wisconsin, in communities large and small in every corner of the state, have done, and this is a word I do not like to use very often, but they have done absolutely heroic work in keeping people safe. If over the pandemic, really, if it had it not been for all of this work, and again, it's just been a heroic effort that's been put forth. Had it not been for that, I really shudder to think what the effect of the pandemic would have been on people who are experiencing homelessness in Wisconsin.
Heather, thanks again for sharing your story. And Mike, you mentioned communities big and small. And I think when people think of homelessness, they might think of visible homelessness, think of larger cities, homeless people panhandling on the street or maybe in an encampment. What aren't we seeing? What's the face of homelessness that doesn't confront us on the street?
Well, the faces of homelessness are manifold, right? And it is something, homelessness is something that is happening in all 72 counties of Wisconsin. Let us be very clear. This is not a Madison and Milwaukee or Green Bay or other large city issue. This is something that is happening in urban areas and rural areas, everywhere in the state. And before the pandemic, when I was able to go in person around Wisconsin to meet with the folks who are working on this, there were not a whole lot of differences other than in scale. Some communities have single digits of people who are homeless, and they could be people who are doubled up. There could be people couch surfing. There could be people that are sleeping in a tent in the middle of the woods where nobody would ever find them. And everything in between. It's an issue that affects all of us in every county. Definitely want to make that clear.
And Mike, just in our last minute or so, the state budget, it's not a done deal yet. If there's one thing that you wanted the governor and lawmakers to agree on that can make a difference over the next couple of years, what would you put at the top of your list for them?
Well, investments in affordable housing would certainly be the number one thing that I would, if there was only one thing. And then this is the thing. We've been receiving a lot of funding from the federal government, and yes, that is true, and that is very welcome. And while some may want to look at that as an excuse to not fund at state level, the things that we've been seeing funded from the federal government, like emergency rental assistance and potentials for affordable housing, et cetera, they only take and the emergency solutions grant program that does fund certain programs. They are only taking care of certain pieces of a very complex puzzle. There needs to be a very broad spectrum of support and interventions, be it everything from job training to childcare to alcohol and drug abuse, mental health, case management. I could go on for at least another hour about all the different programs that need to be well funded in order to really tackle all of the aspects of homelessness in the state.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Mike Bassford, director of the Wisconsin Interagency Council on Homelessness.